Good afternoon. You're listening to KMXT 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station here in Kodiak, and it's time for Talk of the Rock. I'm your host today, Dylan Simard, and joining me is Kirsten Dobroth, the new reporter.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fantastic, even better now that I'm working with somebody
You're
else.
You're not alone anymore.
Exactly. So I hear that you basically were inculcated into KMXT the same way I was, which is not having a car and being compelled to drive the Subaru around, which for me was almost impossible because I didn't know how to drive stick before I drove that car. And I'm pretty sure that I've worn like the gears and the gearbox down to be buttery smooth.
Yeah. As Mike says, it's quirky. It definitely does not enjoy going into gear.
I hear you have to hold the stick in place for in certain gears.
Yeah. Just with a couple. but it works. It gets me around. It's been great.
Okay. Well, I mean, if it ain't broke, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, welcome to Kodiak. What is it like for you to be here right now? Was you expecting it to be this cold? Or
no, I mean, honestly, the weather, I know it's been unseasonably cold, but It's actually been a little bit more temperate. I've been living in the mountains in Colorado, so it tends to get down to single digits pretty frequently there.
Do you ever get like crazy windstorms?
We did actually when I was driving down from, so I drove from Aspen down to Denver to catch my flight to get here, and they were having a crazy wind event, and it was actually really unusual. Like commercial trucks were knocked over on the highway because they were having these insane windstorms. But that's more the Front Range where I was living. You do get higher winds, but it's nothing like historic.
We get some pretty good windstorms here from time to time.
I heard that before I was coming here. I think you guys had a crazy one.
Fortunately, whenever I report on the windstorms, they tend to not happen. So I'm here to look out for people, I guess.
You're jinxing yourself, Dylan.
I am jinxing myself. Yeah. It'll be a boy who cried wolf type of situation. You're a reporter. Why report in Kodiak of all places?
You know, so as I mentioned before, I was just at Aspen Public Radio in Colorado, and I've lived in little ski towns for the last 10 plus years, and I really enjoy living in interesting and unique places. And Alaska's just been calling to me for a while, and you know, this job opened up and I had to jump on it.
So I guess let's talk a bit about your background as a reporter. How did you get into reporting? Like, when was like that moment where you're like, this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah, I think I always kind of knew. I think I'd mentioned to you that when I was like in elementary school, I would always say my favorite show was the news, which made me really cool. I guess I had always kind of known that this was something that I was really interested in, and journalism more broadly. And yeah, I started out as a freelancer and kind of clawed my way to getting on staff at a magazine. And from there, you know, I've always loved public radio and had always really wanted to kind of take that, go into that direction. So it was just a matter of time, I think.
So you mentioned that your background was in print. Kind of walk me through, what are the different things that you've been doing in like your news career?
Okay, so I started as a freelancer, and that was just writing for my local paper, pitching things and getting assignments. And then, you know, I started pitching to magazines. I think my first year freelancing, I had a piece in Backpacker magazine, which was really exciting as someone who had been, you know, knocking on doors trying to figure out how to make this happen for myself. And then I did some stuff for 5280, which is a big magazine in Denver. And that was kind of really confidence boosting, although the road of freelancing is paved in failure for anyone who's trying to do it listening. I got an opportunity to work for Saga City Media, They publish Seattle Met, which is one of their big magazines, but they have a whole umbrella of customs, and they have a magazine called Bale Beaver Creek Magazine. This is when I was living in Bale. And so I was the digital editor there and kind of moved into an assistant editor capacity and did just a bunch of, they have a bunch of magazines that I was writing for all sorts of titles for them. So I was reporting on everything from the future of farming in Colorado to backcountry skiing to water issues in the state of Washington. And I was on staff there for 2 years and then moved back into freelancing. And then the pandemic hit and I pretty much had all of my work killed. And within a week of the pandemic, Aspen Public Radio actually reached out to me and said they had this opportunity for me and they thought that I should apply. And it, you know, it was a huge opportunity. I still pinch myself that that happened and it opened this door for me, which is very exciting.
So I believe we have a common connection through Colorado Public Radio, and that person is Sadie Babbitts. Can you tell me a little bit about how you met Sadie?
Yes, Sadie. So when I started at Aspen Public Radio, they were down a news director. They had an interim news director who was great, and Sadie was kind of operating in a consultant position for the station. So she did a lot of over the phone edits with me, and she would meet with us, you know, once a week as kind of a feature meeting to talk about story ideas and then work with us on production and putting them together and editing our pieces. And I texted her when I got the job here and we discovered we both had her in common, and that's been fun.
During, I believe, that same period that you were working with Sadie as a consultant, she was my news director for Arizona Public Media. It was Cronkite News, which did news for Arizona PBS. So definitely well acquainted with Sadie, and maybe she's listening, but thank you, Sadie. You made me
good. We love you, Sadie.
We love you,
wherever
Sadie.
You are.
So tell me a little bit about, I mean, so you've been in Colorado for a long time, and Colorado is like, there's definitely snow, it's definitely cold, but that's still a pretty big leap all the way up to Alaska. What pushed you to do that?
Yeah, I've been in Colorado for 13 years. 10 of those were in Vail and the Aspen area. But you know, I've always lived in little ski towns. I live in the mountains. There's a lot to be said about small communities. I'm really used to going to the grocery store at 5 and knowing everybody and, you know, having to saying hello in every aisle because you see someone you know. And when I lived in Vail, you know, they have one local paper. And it really impressed upon me when I went to Aspen how important a public radio station is for that small community. You know, they have wildfires and people live on ranches with no internet service and they go into their cars and listen to what's happening. And, you know, I think that there's probably a type of rugged romanticism around Alaska that a lot of people who have moved here had at one point, probably still have.
I must warn you, the rugged romanticism is completely true.
I believe it. Yeah. And so I think that there's just, I think I told you, my husband and I have been saying for years when we moved to Alaska one day. And so I think Colorado has been a really special home, particularly the mountains of Colorado. It was bittersweet to leave. It will forever have a piece of my heart. But this is just the next chapter. And so it kind of called to me.
Mm. So, I mean, Alaska has some very unique beats, and you know, I would hardly say that, like, you know, water rights, for example, they change certainly from place to place you go, but there's almost always water right issues in different communities. There's always, like, business, you know, you have certain areas that have different types of weather, but Alaska has a few very interesting beats kind of that are of its own. I mean, search and rescue, the scale at which that happens in Alaska is just incomparable to anything else in the U.S. You know, covering energy here, energy projects, rural energy is an incredibly difficult and interesting thing to work in. I mean, the certainly energy here, the Kodiak is famous for its windmills, I guess the big one that I'm thinking of, though, of course, is Alaska's fisheries, which are there are probably three people in the whole state who actually have a pretty good grasp of it and can report on it with, you know, the highest degree of confidence. I wanted to ask you, you know, what kind of Alaska beats are you excited for? What are you really looking forward to doing and testing your mettle with?
Well, certainly fisheries, just because I self-admittedly don't know a lot about it yet. And I'm really excited just to learn more. I think that's just part of being a reporter, is being curious. So that's something I'm really excited to dive into. Environment, certainly. You know, I think just living in the Mountain West, that's something that's a huge part of reporting. It touches on so much. And like you said, you know, there's a lot of Alaska has its own things that I'm sure I'll learn more about, but there is overlap from the Mountain West, you know, search and rescue you mentioned. I think that environment and fisheries are two things that jump out at me, but I think there's going to be a lot that I'm just excited for it all, frankly.
Mm. I mean, it's I'll share a story with you that I think I've already told you, and I've certainly already mentioned on Talk of the Rock before. But when I first was being interviewed for this position, they asked me if I had any experience doing fisheries reporting, and I was so proud of myself to say that I had reported on fish being reintroduced to one of the the flooded desert floor turned lake bed areas in Arizona formed by people building dams. And one fishery story in Arizona, that's a whole lot. Very few people have ever done anything on it was a sport fishery story. There's not a lot of that in Arizona. In Alaska, yeah, that's less than nothing. It's totally negligible. And I definitely jumped in feet first into freezing Alaska waters.
As I'm sure I will as well.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It'll be trial by water.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your decision to switch from print media to radio. What was kind of the thing that pressed you to do that?
You know, it's hard to put a finger on. This is going to sound silly, but I've always really enjoyed reading aloud. And on top of that, I think I'd mentioned I've always really enjoyed NPR programming. I grew up in New England, so WBUR was my home station, you know, here and now, on point. And I've always just really been drawn to the connection people make with, you know, with a voice on the radio and somebody that tells them what's going on. And so I think that that was just something that really intrigued me. That being said, when you jump from print to radio, it's very different writing styles.
Oh, yes.
that was a difficult transit, not a difficult transition, but just a transition that I had to make. But, you know, print's special, too, because you don't have somebody's voice that you can just play to, you know, illustrate a story. You really have to create a scene around it. But, you know, when you hear something, I mean, there's just a certain magic about that. So, yeah, you know, I think it was just something that really intrigued me, and that I can't really say exactly why, but it was just something I knew I wanted to do.
I mean, I guess that's fair. I must confess myself that I made this switch too, and it was definitely there is an attraction certainly to being able to deliver the stories with your own voice.
Yes,
you are a bit of a world traveler.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about that?
I should say, before the pandemic.
Yeah, before the
pandemic, when we could travel.
You were telling me a very interesting chain of events that led to you living for some time in New Zealand.
Yes. So I moved to Vail right after graduating from CU Boulder, and you know, it was 2011, not a lot of jobs for a liberal arts major with no experience in their field. And I bartended in Vail and snowboarded a bunch and saved a bunch of money. And my then boyfriend, now husband, and I bought one-way tickets to Hanoi, Vietnam after a ski season there, which, of course, our parents were thrilled about.
You can ski in Vietnam?
No.
Oh, I thought.
No. This was after a season. I'm sorry, after a season in Vail.
I see.
Not that I know of. So we went there and we were on a climbing trip in Vietnam, and we just bought these one-way tickets. It was our first month there. We didn't know what we were doing, and we were on this climbing trip and we met a group of Kiwis, and they were super nice and super...
What's a Kiwi?
Okay, it's somebody from New Zealand. And they, you know, a group of guys, super nice. They spent, you know, we spent the day climbing together and, you know, kind of partied that night at the bar and with the climbing guides. And, you know, we were telling them we had this open-ended trip and everything. And they were like, you have to come to New Zealand. You know, when you're done, you have to come to New Zealand. And we were kind of like, okay. And this one guy in particular was like, come to New Zealand. You can stay at my house. I'll pick you up from the airport. I'll be personally offended if you don't get in touch with me. For like, okay, good to know. So the next day we made the journey from the island we were at. It was a little rough day after our day and night. But we made the journey to this other place in Vietnam on boat and bus. And we were so tired. And we, you know, got something to eat and went back to our guest house, and you know, they had one English language channel, and we turned it on, and there was a Lord of the Rings marathon on TV. And we both love Lord of the Rings, like read the books, super into it, the movies, like we were really into when they came out. And of course it's filmed in New Zealand, and we were like, okay, this is meant to be, we have to go there. So when we were kind of wrapping up our time in Asia, we bought one-way tickets to New Zealand, and I looked this guy up on Facebook. I didn't have any information about him, the guy that had said to contact him, and he would be personally offended if we didn't. And I looked him up on Facebook. I didn't have anything but his name, and sent him a message. And true to his word, he showed up at 11:30 at night to pick us up from the airport. He lived 45 minutes away and was he was a dairy farmer. He ran a, you know, I think he had like 2,000 cattle or something like that. And so he had to be up at 4 the next morning to milk these cows. And we stayed with him for like 4 days, and then hitchhiked our way to Queenstown, which is in the Southern Alps on the South Island of New Zealand, a little ski town, and lived there for a year. And it was it was an adventure. That's a long and winding story for anybody listening.
that's the best type of story.
Yeah.
I hear that you are a, I suppose I should inform you that this is a dog-friendly station.
Yes.
You have a dog, correct?
I do.
Tell us about your dog.
I hope he's listening. he is 5. He's a wire-haired pointing Griffon. So if you're familiar with like a German short hair pointer, it's like a fluffy Dutch cousin, I guess. His name is Yukon, Yukon Cornelius, but we just call him Yukon.
Oh, that I like that.
Yeah. Once you see, especially he loves the snow, loves to ski, he loves to camp. He's not a big fan of summer, so I think Alaska will be perfect for him. Once you see his coat, you'll know why he's not a big fan of summer.
Well, the thing about the summer is that we're right now today, shortest day of the year.
Yes.
And it's going to be very short, but our summers are conversely very, very long days. So yes. Hopefully he'll be all right with that.
He'll like the sunlight. It's mostly the heat. Where we were living last, which is Basalt, which is just outside of Aspen, it was like... in the 90s every day, which is really hot generally, but the last few summers it's been particularly hot.
Right.
And he does not like that at all. much rather would love to have snow to roll in than a sunny summer day.
You know, I'm shocked with how well, I mean, so we have our station dog here with us now, Mater, the big boxer Dane, and he, I brought him from Phoenix, and he, was like totally pretty much okay with the Phoenix heat. I mean, it's not, no one's okay with Phoenix heat, but as happy as a dog could be.
Yeah.
And he totally doesn't mind the cold weather here.
Yeah, he's in his element.
Yeah, he's just coming up to you right now, huh?
Yeah, we didn't get him a microphone. Maybe next time.
Yeah, he'd just be snorting now.
Not a lot to say.
Not really. He's pretty mute. So are you going to be bringing your dog in? We're going to have a second station dog.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he loves other dogs. He was a station dog at Aspen Public Radio. He was actually, we had a office dogs drop down on our website, and he was, I think his official title, I don't know why they gave it this to him because he's not like this, but his official title was security.
So, I like that.
Yeah. So I'm sure he'll make an appearance.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a little bit, and this is kind of a more serious question, but for me, I was somebody who, like you, graduated during a time where the job market was uncertain and the economy was a little freaky. Do you have any advice for young folks who are getting into this environment now? It's better jobs-wise than it was, you know, a year ago. But what advice would you give to people who are graduating during a pandemic?
I feel for kids who are in school right now and college kids. You know, I think so many of us think of our experiences that, you know, was the quote unquote normal experience, and now nothing is quite that way anymore. But, you know, from my own experience, not having graduated in a pandemic, I guess I go back to freelancing. That was really, really hard. freelancing, I mean, anything you want to do that's really worth it is really hard. And, you know, if you just really believe in yourself and work really hard, I mean, that's the key, is just, you know, maybe not the blood, but the sweat and tears part of it. It's definitely true. And just having a belief in yourself and you know, having a good support, a circle of support around you, I think is another big piece of it. And I hope that's helpful. You know, it's hard to say now. I mean, things are so different. But maybe that's how it is now. So sorry for the ambiguous answer, but hopefully if anyone is looking for some inspiration, that's helpful.
I'm sure there are some people listening who will really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So you are now in a total, you were working in Colorado,
mm-hmm.
and to my understanding, the atmosphere of the Alaska public media scene and kind of the way that it works is very different. Would you be willing to go over some of those particulars?
Yeah, it's similar but different. You know, working at a small station in Colorado, there's a lot of content sharing that goes on. And I think that's probably pretty similar to Alaska. You know, the Mountain West News Bureau does regional coverage throughout the throughout like Colorado, kind of Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, Idaho, Montana, Utah. So that kind of is a content sharing pooling thing. And then you have, you know, your big member stations that are, you know, CPR, Colorado Public Radio. And then there's in Aspen, we were part of the Rocky Mountain Community Radio connection too. So that's kind of its own little network of things that share. So that's similar, I guess. You know, you kind of depend on each other for stories, and you know what's happening in Aspen, that might be relevant to Crested Butte, which has its own station, and that might be relevant to Jackson Hole, which has its own station. So I think in that way, it's pretty similar. That being said, you know, after one day on the job, I'm sure there's big differences. I think some of the things just in the way that the formatting of some of the features and wraps that we were talking about, like the content we put together, mm-hmm. is a little bit different. But yeah, I guess we'll see. I probably will have a better answer after like a week.
You're right. I will tell you now, as certainly some of the listeners know, that the reporters and the way that they tell stories in the Alaska public media community is as diverse as Alaska broadly, which is to say extraordinarily so.
Yeah, I bet.
I hear that you got a proper Alaska welcome just on the flight over.
Yeah, I did. I, as anyone who's flown here, I think could probably understand. I flew from Denver to Seattle to Anchorage to here,
mm-hmm.
and the flight to from Anchorage to here was I had a 3-hour layover in Anchorage, and we got on the flight to Kodiak, no problem, took off on time, and kind of circled the island a few times in the air, and our pilot got on and said, "We have some bad news. The runway has a little too much snow and ice, so we're going back." So we came back to Anchorage, and I stayed in Anchorage for the night, and I woke up at 2 a.m. to a little earthquake. So that was my little Alaska welcome. And then, got to the airport early the next morning and made it here. So it was an odyssey.
Yeah, it was. I mean, no kidding. And your husband is doing the long drive from Colorado all the way to, is it Homer or?
Yeah. And then taking the ferry over, as he says, he's not very smart. he's very smart, but that's his joke about this whole thing. I promise anyone who's concerned for him, he's not doing it alone. He's got a buddy from college, a guy that we both lived with off and on at CU Boulder, that they normally go on a winter camping trip in Colorado in the mountains. One year they like dug a snow pit and slept in it. So this is their own kind of suffer fest, I think, for this year. And Yukon, our dog, will be along for the ride too. So they're giving themselves about 10 days, which is, you know, more time. But I think that's probably better, for the better.
When's he hitting the road?
Tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So today's his last day in Colorado, doing all the last minute packing things.
I see.
Yes.
Wow.
And don't worry, he's not doing it in like a Honda Civic or something like that. He's got an actual 4-wheel drive vehicle.
You mentioned, in fact, that you are a big Lord of the Rings fan. I ask because you mentioned that your Jeep, I believe it was, has a particular name.
It does. It's Fatty Lumpkin. We call it Fatty. And it's a character from The Hobbit. It's actually a pony. I don't think it was... Okay, I have to double check this, and this is maybe making me sound not quite as much of the Lord of the Rings fan as I am, but... It wasn't Bilbo Baggins' pony, but it was another character's pony, like a noble steed. So Fatty will be going on the journey. Fatty's a 16-year-old Jeep that has done us well in Colorado. So this might be his last big adventure before we set him free. we'll see. We'll see how the journey goes.
What a way to put it. So we're winding down to our last few minutes here. I'd like to just give you the opportunity to talk for a little bit and tell we're down to our last minute here. Is there anything that you'd like the folks at home to know about, or anything that you'd like to say for the purpose of introducing yourself?
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. You know, everybody's been really welcoming so far. This is kind of a dream. So I'm, you know, it's been, like I said, it's been an odyssey so far, but I'm excited for it to continue.
Well, we look forward to having you here. Certainly, it's been nice. It feels like the KMXT family has gained a new member, so.
Thank you. I know. Likewise.
Well, thank you for listening to another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. I was your host today, Dylan Simard, and joining me was Kirsten Dobroth, the new reporter for KMXT. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dylan.